o'clock. Let's have a meeting. Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Amen.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open, big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step one. We have instituted a new format, actually a temporary format. This is the last night we're doing it. But for tonight, we're not going to have a panel. We are going to have a single person sharing experience, strength, and hope on the first part of step one from the podium. And when his remarks have concluded, I will call on people from the audience to share. So I am going to go ahead and read all of what we have for this first meeting on step one, which is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I'm starting on page XXVI. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Moving on to page XXVIII. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Continuing on the same page, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that, while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful, with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Moving on to the next page, XXIV. On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Moving on to page XXX. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. The speaker tonight is Graham, and we are very happy to have him. Please join me in welcoming him.
Hello. My name's Graham Rutherford. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's October the 19th, 1997. I'm in a home group out in the swamp in Great Bridge. So if you're ever out that way, come out and see us on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. It's called the Great Bridge Step Study. There's a funny story about that. If you look it up in the meeting list, the paper copy of the meeting list, I went in and told the lady we'd started a home group, and she asked me what it's called, and I said the Great Bridge Step Study. So to this day, when you look it up, great is spelled G-E-R-E-A-T, because that's how it sounds when I say it. So anyway, you're welcome out in Great Bridge anytime. I'll thank Amy for asking me to come and speak. It's good to be back in Norfolk again. I lived here for many years and participated in Alcoholics Anonymous for about 10 years in this community. And it's great to see that this meeting and some other meetings have really been able to continue to carry AA's simple message of hope. I have to tell you guys, I didn't know what alcoholism was. I didn't know I was an alcoholic, but AA has so profoundly changed my life. I'm a one-chip wonder, thank God. I went to AA one time when I was 25 years old, and I've never drank or done drugs since then. It profoundly changed my life. And I was thinking about it recently, and I've actually, since then, over the last 21 years, I've spent a large part of my free time carrying AA's message to other people and hoping that they can find a way out as well, like I did. Alcoholics Anonymous really worked for me, and it continues to work, so I still go to AA. I'm not a fanatic, you know, I don't live in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm married to Heather, we've got two kids. And spend a lot of time with them, and I have a job, you know. I'm not independently wealthy, unlike some people here tonight. So, you know, I have to work. So I have a pretty normal life. I go to AA three times a week, usually. I pray and meditate. I'm not really sure about all that God stuff, but I pray and meditate and on a daily basis, and I do the other simple things that have saved my life. So I'm going to talk about step one, but really this is, that was weird. There is, did anyone else hear that, or was it just me? Okay, good, it's okay. I thought it was inside my head again. Just like to make sure it's not just me. Anyway, so they want me to talk about step one, and let's do it. So I was thinking about it today when I was driving around in my job, you know, really step one, what is that? What's that all about? And, you know, when did I really take step one? You know, was it the last time I drank? Is that when I took step one? You know, I promised myself I would not drink that night, because by this time my behavior was so bizarre and frightening to me and especially other people, because I'm usually in a blackout, so I don't even know what I'm doing until after when they tell me. But my behavior was so extreme when I drank that I would try not to drink around normal people because I didn't want them to see. So I had a party for my co-workers at my house. I just got a new job, and I remember for a week or two before telling myself, you can't drink at that party, you can't drink at that party. Because by this time I had hundreds of experiences that when I drink alcohol, I love alcohol. I love the way it makes me feel. The first drink I took at 13, it blew my socks off. I remember just rolling around on the ground laughing my ass off the first time I drank. Drinking alcohol is a joyful experience for me. It's the best. Probably the best night of my life was that night. And of course I had a blackout as well, which means I'm walking around saying and doing things, but the next day I don't really recall it, which is fine with me. And I didn't realize why I was drinking anyway. I mean, non-alcoholic people don't seem to get that tremendous sense of relief that I get when I drink alcohol. I drink alcohol and it's like, oh, yeah, baby. And then I just seem to want more. It talks in the book about an allergy. I don't know anything about that when I'm drinking. It talks in the book about a phenomenon of craving, blah, 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 blah. I don't know what that means when I'm drinking. All I know is that I really, really want to drink on Friday. Really want to drink on Friday. I'm focused like a laser on Friday and it's only Monday. But I really want to drink. And all I know is this, when I start drinking, it just all starts to come together for me and I start to feel better. And it just seems like I should have another drink. And then it seems like I should have another drink. And then the next thing you know, I'm in a blackout again. And I do and say horrible things. I'm a big domestic violence guy. I'm a big guy that wets on myself and vomits and starts altercations with people. That's the kind of behavior I engage in when I'm drunk. And I wake up and I'm full of shame. I'm not even saying I'm not going to drink again when I wake up, because I love drinking. I need to drink. But I'm trying to figure out how I can just make that all go away. I'm a binge drinker. I've never been homeless. I didn't drink every day. I used to binge drink on the weekends, mostly. So I didn't know anything about these terms that are in this fancy book here. But what I knew is that I loved the feeling that alcohol gave me. And it was really only when I came to AA that people gave me vocabulary to talk about that. They gave me vocabulary to talk about the way I feel when I'm sober. Because that's really the problem that I have, is how I feel when I'm sober. I hate being sober. I didn't know that. I didn't know that at all. I just felt very, very wound up when I was sober. I'm an intense, angry dude all the time. I don't like the fact that I was born in that country in that century with those people. Why couldn't I have been a pirate or something exciting like that? That's what I want to do. I want to be wild. And I feel just so disappointed in people and in humans and this planet, and just all of it is so disappointing to me. It's like some terrible black and white movie. And then when I drink that alcohol, my friends, the music plays and it all comes to life and life's wonderful and I love you, bro, come here. Or maybe I hate you, I don't know. But I'm going to feel something and I get that tremendous relief. I love it, I love it, I love it. And let's do some drugs as well. but maybe make me able to drink even more and not black out so fast. I don't care. Let's do it. If you're paying for it, it's even better. So I don't know about cravings. I don't know about obsession, but I'm obsessed with alcohol. After the first time I drank at 13, I was obsessed with alcohol. Obsessed with it. It became my whole life. My grades at school went like this, and my middle fingers went like this. Everybody aged over 16, loser. If you were 15, 16, you were cool, and I wanted to try and hang out with you. But if you were some old dude, like 20 or 21, forget it. And that was me. I was off. So I was obsessed with it, getting it, stealing the money to get it, blah, blah, on and on and on. That's how it played out for me. So the book explains all that. But when I read this book, when I came to AA at 25, I had no idea what it was talking about. This book seemed unintelligible to me. A book that really helped me was a book called Living Sober. That book was written in a language that I could really understand. When someone offers you a drink, how do you say no? You know, that kind of thing, real practical stuff. Calling people up before an AA, before you go to the event, and calling them when you get home safe without drinking. Never being held hostage at an event, having an escape plan so I can leave when I start to, if I start to feel uncomfortable. Those kind of really practical things. And I really needed a sponsor to explain this to me. It didn't seem to be the kind of book that I could just understand on my own. Although I want to emphasize I'm really, really, really smart. I'm definitely the smartest guy in this room. I'm just looking around. There's some people here think they're smart, but they're not as smart as me. Nobody is ever. So I'm very, very arrogant and very defiant. I'm to this day a defiant person, very selfish, flawed, dishonest to this day. And you see, that was a big block for me at the start. And you'll hear people in AA, oh my God, people in AA love to moralize. They love to moralize. So-and-so got drunk. Oh, he didn't do this and he didn't do that. Shame on him, shame on him. They'll all talk behind the poor soul's back that just relapsed with alcoholism in this big moral position because we're in AA. And I'm like, really? That's not what the book says. A lot of these people are people that claim to know all about the book. I'm not worshipping some book. I'm trying to recreate an experience the book describes. So it's very important to me to realize, what's this really about in here? Is this about being good? Is that what being sober is? Is that a prerequisite to get sober? And is it a requirement to stay sober, to be good, to be morally good? I think that's a confusion. That's more like what you do at a church. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the bottom feeders in here, guys. This is for the people that the church didn't work for. And after this, it's the abyss. That's what's out the door here. That's what's out that door is the abyss. If you're an alcoholic like me, this is it. This is as good as it gets. Charming people as you are. You know, oh my God, I was horrified when I had to come to AA. A man of my caliber with a bunch of bottom feeders like this. If my parents could see me now. Yeah. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is alcoholism's an illness. It's very clear. It's an illness much like any other chronic illness. But in AA, I get all hysterical, you know. But if I take a step back and just look at this as an illness, can I just ask, could people with 20 years of sobriety or more raise their hand, please? Okay, I want to talk about that, guys. I've got 20, that's four people. Okay, so why is there not a whole bunch of people in this room with 20, 30, 40, 50 years sober? AA's been going for 60, 70 years. Is that not kind of worrying to anyone? Is that not troubling? Where are all the long-term sober people? Nobody wants to talk about this. We want to sit around and talk about God and the steps, but we don't want to talk about what's really going on in Alcoholics Anonymous, and we don't want to talk about David's hand. Now, this guy David, he's got a hand, right, with five fingers on it, and I want to tell you this story. I met him, I don't know, was it 15 years ago, something like that? He had got sober in Norfolk, right here, guys, in this city. He's a Norfolk boy. He got sober here. And his life came together. He got a sponsor. He did the steps. And then, about 5-6 years sober, like happens to so many of us, he got distracted by the success of staying sober, the family, the job, And David stopped going to AA for 10 years. And I'm not telling his experience, there's a point to this. So I met him when he came back. Him and I met at a meeting. Guess what? David was coming back as a newcomer and he got ignored. He didn't drink. He stayed sober, but people were just ignoring him. He was like, I'm new. And they were like, yeah, yeah, whatever. I'm talking to my friend. But I've always made a point, and David does too, of reaching out to people that are coming to AA, whether they're coming back or whether they're new guys. And him and I started to talk, and this is what he told me. And it was so profound that it stayed with me ever since. And it's all about his hand. And he said, you know, Graham, it's weird. I've been going to AA for like 2 weeks. I've been going to the same meetings that I used to go to 10 years ago in the same church on the same night. And I can count on one hand the people that are still there that were there 10 years ago. I feel like I'm being a buzzkill tonight. So that got me thinking, and he was thinking as well at that time, what are the people doing that are on David's hand? How did they stay? Because I don't know about you, but I'm a chronic alcoholic, and this illness kills guys like me every day. I must not drink again, no matter what happens. But left to my own devices, my mind will trick me back into drinking. So this is what we and my sponsor at that time, a guy called Al, came up with. The guys on the hand, the guys that stay in AA long term. And this is out of hundreds of people. And if you're in AA, you don't notice it because it just happens slowly by slowly, little by little, one at a time. People just leave AA. And what happens when they leave? Hopefully it's unicorns and rainbows. As an aside, did you know that the unicorn is Scotland's national animal? Yeah, Google it if you don't believe me. Anyway, so we really started to think about that, and what we discovered, it's really the name of this home group. We discovered that what these people who had stayed for those 10 years were doing, what were they doing? How could we replicate that to make sure? I mean, you guys all look nice and everything, but I want to make sure I'm one of those people, that I'm still going to AA 10 years from now. What are the people doing? And that takes the morality out of this, my friends. This is a method to stay sober. It's very, very simple. And I don't know about you, but I know some horrible people who are not good, they're not nice, and they stay sober year after year after year in spite of what I think of them. AA's got a lot of people like that, and I'm sure a lot of people think I'm one of those people. Please judge me, I love the attention. Anyway, so what were these people doing? What did they have in common? And this is what we came up with. They all go to meetings regularly. They go to meetings. They attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous regularly. They're all members of a home group. And they participate in the home group. They come early. They reach out to people that come to the home group. They go to the business meetings. They help clean up after the meeting. They participate. They take the home group seriously. They want to make the home group as best they can for when the new man or woman walks through the door so they can help them. What else are they doing? They have some kind of spiritual life. And I thought that meant the big J or the big B or something else like that. And it turned out, in my case, it wasn't that at all. It was simply a simple practice of prayer and meditation, which over the years has developed and my belief has changed and continues to change. And inner peace, peace of mind, call it whatever you want. But these people were all doing something like that. They all had sponsors of some description, and they'd all worked the steps, AA's 12 steps. At some point, and we're still working on step work, they were taking it seriously. And perhaps the most important thing of all, and it's definitely been the most important thing in my recovery, they were all working with other alcoholics. They were trying to take AA's simple message of recovery and pass it on to other people who, like when I came to AA, had no idea what was wrong with me. So that was the simple actions. And what I believe is, if I just keep taking these simple actions, no matter what happens, one day at a time, I can stay sober for the rest of my life. That's what we're talking about in here. If you're just in here for a break, welcome. If you're just in here for a year or two, that's fine. Most people leave. I don't care. AA doesn't care. AA doesn't need me. I need AA. But my thing is, I believe I have alcoholism. I'm a chronic alcoholic. And left to my own devices, this brain will get me drunk again. It will get me drunk, and my wife and children will leave, my job will leave, and I'll be back. I probably wouldn't even die. I'd be one of those guys that will take everything from me and then just pummel me for 40 years and then I'll die. You know? So that's the alternative. So I surrender to these things, and if I just do these things one day at a time, it's going to be okay. It's not going to feel good all the time. Sometimes it feels great, but I'm going to be all right. I'm going to be safe and protected, provided I do those things. And if I don't want to do those things, that's okay. A great example, another chronic illness, it would be the illness of diabetes. You know, how does it say it? Diabetes. Yeah. So, you know, some poor souls get diabetes, right? Type 2 diabetes. And we could moralize about it, but let's just take that off the table. So I want to imagine, let's say David gets diagnosed with diabetes on the same day as I do, and we both go to see Dr. Amy, okay? Now, diabetes is a chronic illness like alcoholism. Once you've got it, you have it for the rest of your life, okay? So we both go in and talk to Dr. Amy. What does she do? There's a program. There's a program for diabetes that smart doctors worked out. You take these medicines, you exercise, and you eat these foods, and you don't go to Krispy Kreme. Okay? There's a whole bunch of stuff. There's protocols. People much smarter than me and David worked it out. And Dr. Amy gives us a sheet of paper, and it's all written down. Do's and don'ts. Let's say David's really good, and I'm really, really bad. Let's say he's a good person. Let's say I'm a bad person, bad to the bone. So we run off with our diabetes instructions. I follow Dr. Amy's program. David doesn't. David drives by, sees that hot and ready sign. He can't resist. He goes in, gets a dozen, feels ashamed. He stops exercising. He doesn't want to take the medicine. He's worried about side effects. Me, I'm following it to the letter. I'm at the Y every day. I'm taking my meds. I'm eating salad. So what's going to happen, guys? Does diabetes care that David's a good guy and I'm a bad guy? No. Diabetes will respond to those actions. I take the actions of the program. I can live a long life, cut, feeling good. David ends up in a power chair with no legs. Diabetes doesn't care. Is that a moral question? Is David bad now and I'm good? I'm confused. So why is it with alcoholism? I have to get all up and all moral about it. It took a long time for me to just let that go. My mind still fights it at times. This is completely neutral in my mind. The people that do the actions stay sober. The people that don't, don't. It's simple. It could not be any more clear cut. It's black and white. It's very simple. And if you don't believe me, that's fine. Let's just sit back and watch and see what happens. So anyway, I think I've talked about the allergy. I think I've talked about the obsession. And the final thing I would like to say as far as step one goes is just this idea of surrender. The book's very clear. Later on, Amy, I don't think, read it, but it talks about we have to smash the idea that somehow, someday, we'll be able to drink like non-alcoholic people. It says that idea has to be smashed. Also in the book, it talks about a process and how my first sponsor, Lance, how Lance explained it to me. He was the big book sponsor, the first one. He said, listen, this is a process. And when you picked up that drink at 13 years old, that was the start of the step one process. I drank that stuff and I was off to the races. And in my case, it took 13 years to do step one. And the book says that eventually, at the end of that process, we become convinced that the way we're living life, the way I'm living that drinking life, it says is futile and hopeless. And I don't know about you, but I ended up curled up in a ball on the floor yet again after promising I wouldn't drink at that party for all my new co-workers. And drinking and getting drunk and having a blackout and having a debacle. And I woke up again crying like a big baby. And I realized I'm always going to be like this. And no matter where I go or what I do, I'm always going to drink, do bad stuff, and feel like this. And there's nothing I can do about it. I just break everyone's heart that comes near me. And that the book says that's the process of step one. So we can come in here and pontificate about this. And God knows I love to pontificate. Can you tell? It's my favorite thing. My voice is like enchanting to me or something. It's my favorite sound. But the bottom line seems to be this. Alcoholism doesn't care what I think. Alcoholism doesn't care what I think about step one. Alcoholism just does its thing. Kills people. Makes them miserable, then kills them. That's all it does. It's just an illness. And it doesn't really seem to matter what I think about alcoholism. It exists. And talking about it is one thing. I think it's good to get an understanding. My first 6 months in recovery, I wasn't real sure if I was an alcoholic. I kept going back to, I'm too young and I'm too smart. That was the two things that stood out. And I would have debates with myself in my mind about it. And what I used to do, because my sponsor told me to do it, was I would just go back and just play that tape through of what really happens when I drink. And the bottom line is, if I really sit myself down and look at some drinking episodes, it's not good when I drink. It's generally not good. The initial feeling is good, but all the stuff that happens after that is a nightmare. And I was doing things I said I would never do, behaving in ways I said I would never behave, and doing it all over again. It's insane when you're like me to continue to pick up that first drink. And they love that in Scotland in AA. They don't really do it much in America. I don't know why, but you get this angry Scottish alcoholic that AA is full of them. And they'll sit at the table and they'll bang their fist and they'll say, if you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. And that stuck with me as well. It's the first one that does the damage. And this program's designed to give me a mental defense against that first drink. But anyway, I'll shut up. I'm gonna talk for one more minute, then I'm done. And all I want to talk about is our AA community. You know, and I don't think he's here tonight. I thought he was going to come, but he must have had to wash his hair. It's a big guy called Mike. He's really tall. And I went to that meeting over in that hospital in Norfolk on Sunday morning. This is like 10, 12, 14, yeah, maybe 11 years ago, 12 years ago. So I go into the meeting. I'd recently moved to Norfolk, and I was horrified. It was the craziest meeting I've ever been at. There was a lady with an oversized Bible in the meeting. I mean, the Bible was big. It was like that size. And she seemed like she was kind of high, and she was really twitching, and she was reading bits out the Bible in the meeting. There was a guy crocheting in the meeting, and he had his sobriety medallion framed hanging around his neck. And there was two or three other people there whose mental status was questionable. And I was there, and across the room was Mike. Mike just got out of rehab in Winchester, and this was his first AA meeting in Norfolk. And I could see he looked worried, because Mike's really smart, and he figured out, oh my God, these people are crazy. And I need to go here for the rest of my life. And what I realized, in all seriousness, they didn't talk about drinking at that meeting. They didn't talk anything about AA. And Mike could potentially go to that meeting and never hear about the problem of alcoholism or AA's simple solution, and could die from alcoholism. That's how serious this is. So I scooped him up, and a few months later, him, and a bunch of other guys took over that meeting, changed the format, and those other people never came back. And that meeting, if you go there today, there's a whole bunch of recovery and there's a whole bunch of people. See, this is it. When I go to the meeting, my responsibility, if there's a new guy in there, is to make sure I reach out to him. And there's two things I want that guy to know. I want him to know that he's not alone and that there is an illness called alcoholism. And the best way for him to identify that is for me to talk about my personal experience with drinking. That's the best way. That's the magic that happened to me at my first meeting. I realized there was other people like me. And that's a really wonderful, powerful thing for us, the power of identification. So that's my responsibility. And if that's not happening in that crazy open discussion meeting, I'm going to go up to the dude and talk to him after the meeting and try to share enough of myself and give him a little bit of my time so he understands that there is an illness called alcoholism, and this is what mine looked like, so maybe he can identify. And the other thing I want the newcomer to have is a sense of hope. I want them to know that this works, and that this is about staying sober one day at a time for the rest of our lives, recreating my life, being reasonably happy most of the time, having some peace of mind. That's what this is about. And I want people to have that experience. So any home group that I'm in, I want to know that if you come in for one meeting and you leave, you get those two things. There is an illness called alcoholism, and this is what AA thinks it is. And there's a simple solution that everybody in this room can understand after just one meeting. This isn't some intellectual construct that's difficult. This is a set of simple steps and actions that anybody can do and anybody can understand, just like the diabetes sufferer. You do what they tell you, you'll be all right. You're rebellious and defiant. Uh-oh. So anyway, I'm really glad to be here tonight. I'll thank Amy again for asking me to come out and share. And I wish everybody well. Thank you.
Okay, who else wants to share on step one? Rich.
Thank you, Amy.
You're very welcome.
I am Rich, I'm an alcoholic.
Are you Rich?
All I knew about step one when I got here was I needed a little bit of help. So I walked in the doors and started with the program. The powerless over alcohol, I figured, was the easy part. I was here, obviously I was powerless, because why would I be here if I wasn't? But I didn't get the unmanageable part. That took me a while to work on. When I was 21, I got a DUI and had to go through the ASAP class, and the gentleman there said, I suggest you go to an AA class. And I'm like, yeah, I will, definitely. But I could not think of how to get in touch with the program. I didn't have a number, I didn't have an address, and it was too hard for me to go out and look for this stuff, to open up a phone book, because we didn't have the internet back then. We didn't have these fancy cell phones that you could just lay in bed with a hangover and say, oh my God, let me see if AA meeting. It took me 25 years to do that exact thing. So that was my powerless. The unmanageable. I had life-threatening issues at times during my alcoholism. Fell down, broke a bottle, bled all over the place. Rushed to the hospital, actually hit an artery. But that didn't seem unmanageable. That was just shit that happens when you drink, right? And when I got farther into my alcoholism near the end, just the fact of cleaning up the house, a friend would be coming over and I'd have to clean up the house. What that consisted of was picking up three cases of beer that was spread out, all the empties, picking them all up, and rushing them out to the recycle bin so you wouldn't see them all. And this guy I drank with, he probably wouldn't care anyways. These are just the unmanageable things that I did. Um, But I was able to work through them with the sponsor and realize that these things aren't normal.
You're good. I'm really not good at this. Right on. I'm calling on somebody else.
All right.
You're
good.
Thank you. You're good.
Calvin.
You can say fuck you, Amy.
Fuck you, Amy. I'm Calvin. I'm an alcoholic. Powerless. So the day before I walked into this meeting for the first time, which was my first AA meeting, I was coming out of a blackout, walking down Hampton, and I called my now ex-wife, and I was like, yo, where's my car? And she was like, you left it here. And I was like, okay, whatever, right? And I was like, I'll go get help. She was like, stop drinking. So I walked into work the next day and self-referred myself to the SART program and walked into that meeting, this meeting that night. And I ran into a couple guys that are still here. And I wish I could say that was the last time I drank, but it wasn't, because I wasn't willing, you know? And I was powerless, and I didn't see that. I was driving to a meeting one time, and downtown Young and Sober, actually. And instead of going to downtown Young and Sober, I ended up parking across the street in the parking lot, and then wandering down the Granby Street, just bar hopping. Ended up in a blackout, almost getting arrested, and woke up the next morning in my house not knowing how I got there, you know? And that's pretty much where my drinking takes me, in powerlessness. It's me not understanding that without a spiritual solution and without the help of a sponsor and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm screwed, you know? If I don't take these simple actions every day, you know? Simple shit, like call somebody, do something, you know? I'm screwed, you know? Thanks, let me share.
Thanks, Calvin.
Leanne, would you like to come?
My name's Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
I'm one of those bottom feeders, and I will eat you to get what I want. Somebody said something about eating earlier, and I will eat you to get what I want. And that could be when I was drinking or even today, you know. That's where the program of Alcoholics Anonymous comes in for me. My first drink was at 11. My parents aren't alcoholics, but I would watch my father come home on Friday night and have a scotch and water. And there was something about in me that I knew that was some good stuff. And as soon as I got hold of that, 11 or 12, something like that, when I had my first drink, I was off and running. And I remember softball, I played softball and I was terrified of catching the ball. And something told me to go out, and my dad had a shop and they had some wine in a jug they would just keep out there, that would make me feel better to go play softball. And that's what I would do. I'd take a couple of swigs of that, and off I'd go to softball practice. And it let that, you know, ease and comfort come. And so I chased that till I was 31 years old. And this is a progressive illness, you know. I could, at that time, those swigs, I could leave it alone. But I can tell you at 31, I couldn't leave it alone for a day. My last drink, it was a party, like Graham was talking about. And I truly meant from the bottom of my heart that I wasn't going to drink that night. And everybody showed up, and sometime around 7 or 7:30, I found myself in a room where we had a bar, and by myself with the door shut, and just drinking and crying because I didn't know what was wrong. And that's where 3 days later I ended up in an AA meeting and heard people talk about drinking like I drank. I told that's justification, rationalization, all this kind of stuff, the words that I didn't know about till I came in here. I heard people talk about it in that first meeting. It was a 12 and 12 and they were on step one. And I was like, these people drink like I do. And so I knew that I was in the right place, and but I still wasn't real gung-ho about it. that, you know, I have fought this throughout the years. But that one commonality, I think that those people that were there at that meeting, you know, said you keep coming back, and regardless of what my life looked like or what I was telling myself, I show up, you know, and it's been a while now. The craving, I can tell you that I used to look at my sister, my brother, because they're partiers. They like to drink, but they don't drink like I do. They don't have that craving, that phenomenon of craving. They could leave it alone. And I can tell you at 31 years old, I couldn't leave it alone. Once I put it in my body, I wanted more. And so I believe today that my body is different than my siblings, different than my parents. Like, there's something within me, there's a chemistry that happens when alcohol goes in my body that makes me want to drink more. And so when it talked in the book, and she read it tonight about abstinence, you know, that wasn't what I was planning on when I came to my first AA meeting. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was, and when I heard the word abstinence, I thought, shit, I can't do that. Like, I can't imagine life with alcohol. But like the book talks about, there came a point in my walk where I couldn't imagine life with alcohol, and I couldn't imagine life without alcohol. And that was kind of that jumping off place for me. I think that's too where I realized the unmanageability, that I could not manage my life. Like, the history was there, and I had a sponsor that helped me to look back at that, you know, with my unmanageability and the powerlessness. So, yeah, if you're new here, keep coming, grab hold of people. You know, I kept hearing that, keep coming back, keep coming back, but there's more to it than that. it's more than just meetings. It's getting a sponsor and going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's been my experience of really when my sobriety took off. For me, going through that book was a little later than how I do with newcomers or people that I'm sponsoring. It's a different route for me today. We get started in this and continue moving on. When I came in 99, a lot of it was 12 and 12. And so I had a little different experience, but that's not how I walk people through today. But there's hope in the rooms, and there are people here that want to help and that have had the experience. So that's all I've got. Thanks.
Thanks. Andrew, do you want to come up? You?
I noticed you.
And a mic too. My name's Andrew. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And step one's kind of cool because it's admission. You realize it's the white flag. And when I first walked into AA, I rushed to get a sponsor, which was good, but I got like three sponsors who told me I wasn't even on step one. So I was like, what the fuck? Like, why am I even here? And so I realized step one was, When I hit my low and I tried to kill myself, it was when I asked for help and told somebody I had a problem. And I went into a treatment, and then a week later I walked into AA. And the cool thing about AA is, you know, you could be young, you could be old, you could be black, white, Asian, anything, you know, gay, straight. And your mind is like mine. You know, you guys have the same mind as me. And so I was amazed when I walked into AA and I picked up my white chip. I told my parents, I was like, they get it. You know, they finally get it. And step one was pretty important when I finally took it and realized, like, I am powerless. And I also hated that the term, you know, if you don't pick up the first drink, you won't get drunk. I thought you guys are idiots. That's common sense. Like, that's abstinence. But then I realized it's the first drink. You know, it's once I take that first drink, you know, there's no going back. It's just, I will get drunk. My mind will cause me to get drunk. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. Thanks.
Debbie, do you want to come?
She's too smart and pretty.
I'm gonna get I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
And I love talking about our personal adventures before and after because I'm still having them. I'm going to hit on psychic change. That's why I don't read out of the book with everybody anymore. I used to do that and had to write. And I had brilliant ideas all the time, or you had a brilliant idea that I had to copy down. And I like to just have the experience today. So what jumped out at me tonight in the reading was psychic change. And I am all about psychic change. In my drinking days, that was what I was looking for, was a psychic change, because I could not live in the skin that I was given. And I don't know about you guys, but in hindsight, I can see I have always protected my source. I did not like smoking pot, but I tried for 3 years until I turned 18, because it at least changed what was going on up here. Got real paranoid, did a lot of thinking, really didn't like it. But I wasn't afraid anymore, and I could breathe a little bit. And then once I got 18 and I could drink, and I've been sober a long time. I'm sober today. I got a home group, but that's enough of that. But anyway, when I hear that, psh, it ain't a Coca-Cola that's in my head, ever, still, today. That I can get relief just hearing that, psh. So protect my supply. I married the Budweiser beer truck driver, and I become a bartender because, hey, you know, I know that I'm going to want to drink. Budweiser's not my drink of choice, but I would start that way if I wanted to behave. You know, once I got to where it talks about more about alcoholism and some of the things we tried, beer was a trial for me, but it didn't last too long. But I really, really, really have had a psychic change is what hit me. I'm not the same person that walked into these rooms. I was definitely, you know, I'm a down and dirty, fall down, look at my scabs on my knees, good night, yay, kind of drinker, and blackout from the beginning. I remember calling the bar one day and saying, I can't come to work today, I'm having car trouble, and they say, we know, Debbie, your car's in the parking lot. And I'm like, good news, bad news, but I know where my car is, won't be at work today, you know, and so I'm a blackout drinker, and I know exactly what everybody has shared tonight. I know what it means that the first drink gets me drunk. I knew that before I came into a room. I was not a daily drinker. I was a Thursday through Sunday, and if I was off on Monday, that'll work too. But I knew that once I took that drink, no telling what's going to happen, because I'm just going to get thirsty. I've never had a drink that didn't want another drink. I would never go to a party where I knew I couldn't drink. If I had a business affair, I would go and then say, I'm out. I wouldn't drink when they were drinking, because I knew I could not drink like I wanted to drink, and I would have to get the hell out of there. And so I would just start once I was in the bar that I wanted to go to or whatever. But I've had this psychic change. You know, I try and fight the people that are trying to save my life. You know, I'm going to fight my sponsor. I don't agree with that step. And, you know, no, I'm too young, too smart, and too pretty. This is not for me. And and so what I did was I fought everything, but I did it. So it doesn't really matter to me today if I believe what this is saying or if I have an opinion on what this is saying. What matters to me is, am I doing what this is saying? And that's how I got the psychic change. You know, I went through these steps with someone that had gone through them before me that was sober, and I was changed as a result of it. You know, I tried to get a guy to be my sponsor because that's the kind of girl I am. And when I first came around, because I did not trust women, and he wouldn't do that, but he did share some of his story with me, and he took me to a lot of meetings until I could find somebody to sponsor me. But he shared with me, he was a car thief. And they told him, come on in, if you sober up, you'll be a better car thief. And so he came on in. Now he doesn't steal cars anymore because you have a psychic change, however that looks in your life. So today I'm not the same person that walked in. And there, I was saying earlier, the only time I even think about drinking or want to drink is when we're doing step one. And so if you're new, you don't ever have to drink again if you don't want to, and we can help you with that. Thanks.
All right, we're going to pass the basket in accordance with the seventh tradition.
The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. I wish that could have gone on all night, though. It was so good. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it did previously. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Yes.
Larry,
hi, Larry.
My home group, the Candlelight Meeting on Colley Avenue, March 29th, which is the fifth Friday of March. We are having a panel with an Ask It basket, so newcomers can, you know, a lot of newcomers may be frightened to share, so they can write a question in the basket that our panel will answer. Our panel will be Leo R., Linda T., and Bobby B., who's a real old-timer. And we also will have some food at 6:30, and the meeting will start at 8. And you're welcome to bring a dish. I think that's everyone. Yeah.
Thanks, Larry. Anybody else? Announcements? Okay. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. Yes. Hi, Anthony, welcome. Hi, Ricky. Welcome. Yes. Hi, Brandon. Welcome. All right. Literature is available on the table to my right. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase a book. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you. Do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here at the front of the room after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, can we all thank Graham for making the trip? And thank you to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 21st, 22nd, and Colonial. Yeah. And will someone volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Nate. I don't, oh yeah, come up here. You can, yeah.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Nate.
Hey, Nate.
All right, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks.
We have a nice way of closing.
Thanks for cheering the meeting.
Thank you.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever.
Amen.
Amen.